Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast, you're going to hear Jason Fitz of the band Perry talking about this.
It was a fumble. There's no such thing as a tuck.
Come on, man. Is that necessary? All right. How about Neil, our Washington superfan? What are you going to say?
Well, Jay, I wouldn't get out of bed for $14.26 million for a start.
Oh, this is getting worse and worse.
Well, you know, to be honest, Jay, it's the Rams, so who cares?
Oh, come on. All right. Enough of you. You know what? Let's just get the show started. I'm verklempt.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
It is another edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Notice I didn't say exciting, because I'm trying to work in new adjectives, get a better vocabulary. Maybe I should buy one of those word of the day calendars. Maybe I should stay on point and not in this weird tangent. I am Pod Vader. I'm here with another Next Fan Up podcast, our first quote unquote live podcast in quite some time. You may have been enjoying our preseason prediction podcasts. Every division has been previewed and our postseason has been previewed, and one of our superfans with us today here, Neil, the Washington Redskins superfan, not very happy with our preseason postseason prediction show. Isn't that right, Neil?
It's a distant memory now, Jay, and I think come next February, I'll be raking it out and playing it back to you. I do wonder, though, I know it's Wednesday, but is Wednesday the day where Justin and Greg, our Thursday guys, go for a stroll in the park, hand in hand, skipping through the trees?
It might be. It might be. While it's Wednesday for us, it's Thursday for the listener. So just remember and keep that in mind.
Huh.
Yeah. It's an interesting time travel experiment. James is our Texan superfan. He can tell you all about time traveling as he's our big Game of Thrones guy. Hello, James.
Howdy, Pod. We won't get into other experiences with DeLoreans. I know on other podcasts for other places you had a bad experience with the DeLorean.
I didn't have a bad experience. It was quite a good experience. Quite possibly one of the most exciting memories of my time with the former four-letter network. But in any case, we're no longer talking about four-letter networks. We are talking about football and the NFL specifically. And as I mentioned, we've done those division previews. We have a postseason preview. We invite you to go check those out. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, or of course you can catch us on Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, AHA Radio, all the places where great podcasts are heard. That's how you can listen to the show. Share it with a friend. Leave us a review. We love reviews. We love reading reviews on this podcast. So if you leave a review, we're going to read it. And we're going to read one later on in today's show because we do have a new one to read. So please subscribe, download, share, enjoy. That's sort of the order. You could do it out of order, I suppose. You got to do it in the right order to a certain extent. Send us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. And you can tweet us at NFU Podcast and check out our Facebook page. We're always doing some different things on our Facebook page. You can check out, obviously, all of our podcasts, but we also have our top 10 lists for every single team. The top 10 greatest players for every single team is located there. And I guarantee you don't agree with every single one of our opinions on that. So there's no reason for you not to check that out and not to leave us a comment so that we can respond on this here podcast. A few things that we're going to get into, and we're going to start with the franchise tenders. The deadline's coming up for long-term deals, and quite a few of our franchise guys haven't either signed their deal or come to a long-term deal. We have a couple of opinions from some of our super fans based on their teams, but let's start with Von Miller here, Neil and James. He hasn't signed his deal. He says there's no way in heck he's going to play for the franchise tender, which, by the way, I never quite understood. Your franchise tag is 100% guaranteed money. Why would you not play for $14.26 million? Neil, I'll start with you.
Well, Jay, I wouldn't get out of bed for $14.26 million for a start. secondly, I think it's all about injury, isn't it, for the players? The what is it? The famous quote: I don't want to be the NFL's girlfriend. I want to get married. I think they want a long-term deal. Injury risk. But hey, with Von Miller, it is a funny one because I'm not sure. He always comes across as a real team guy and a real committed player, but he's done a few things in the past which make you wonder who he is really. And it will be interesting. Will he actually go and sit the season out? I can't see it. I think the problem for Denver is Philadelphia. I mean, they must be the most unpopular front office in football with a deal for Fletcher Cox, which probably has thrown a small, not a large spanner in the works, but a small, sort of medium-sized spanner in the works.
Yeah, James, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, Denver's offer has $58 million in overall guarantees, $38.5 million guaranteed at signing, $39.8 million guaranteed within the first 2 years, and included in that $38.5 million is a $21.5 million signing bonus. So again, what are you holding out for here, Von Miller?
I mean, he's got to be holding out for more money, obviously. I mean, this is his, what little leverage he has is that he's a Super Bowl MVP. You look at the last player who signed a big deal after the Super Bowl MVP, which would be Joe Flacco, and nobody really faults him for cashing in on that. We go through this every year. It seems like Denver goes through this every year. Last year, they had Demaryius Thomas, and, you know, both him and Dez Bryant held out until, you know, the day before. They could do a long-term deal, and they both came to what I would not be afraid to necessarily call collusional deals, where the guaranteed money, the years, the overall money was virtually identical. But you know, Von Miller will probably end up signing a deal, they're just arguing now over number of guarantees, how much money is going to be paid out, and exactly when. Because if he's not going to get more in guaranteed money, then he's obviously going to want more money up front. Just because, you know, the team would have all of the leverage on a new deal once, you know, 2 or 3 years goes down the road. And so, yeah, you know, $38 million, we all want to scoff and say, oh, of course, you know, we where can I sign up to get $38 million? If he was on the free market, if there wasn't a franchise tag, which is a fun thing to think about, you know, he would blow Fletcher Cox's deal out of the water because he's that much better of a player.
But you know, see, when I hear, let me interrupt you real quick there, because when I hear that argument, sure, he's going to blow that deal out of the water and he's going to be playing for the Cleveland Browns at the same time.
I mean, not necessarily. There, you know, yes, Cleveland has a lot of money to spend, but, you know, with like what the Washington Redskins did with Norman when he got cut by the Carolina Panthers, it shows that teams not just at the bottom of the barrel can suddenly free up money when a good player becomes available. You know, there's people out there far smarter and getting paid far more than I would be to just look at the cap and how to fit these contracts in. You know, any team can make that kind of thing happen. It's just a question of how. You know, any team that thinks they're just one pass rusher away, Dallas Cowboys, you know, would break the bank to sign Von Miller and make a run at things. So,
the other thing that I look at here is when you're talking about the difference between $58 million and Fletcher Cox's $63.299 million. I mean, yes, it's a difference of $5 million there. But I mean, is $5 million really that big a difference when you're talking about that huge amount of money?
It is, though, because of the way the deal is structured. I believe Cox's deal gets him $55 million paid by the beginning of 2017. By the way, the signing bonuses and everything like that.
$63 million.
Oh, $63 million. Excuse me.
Well, no, $55 million of the $63 million gets paid by early next March.
Yeah.
That's the
deal. I mean, if they're telling Von Miller, yeah, you know, you're guaranteed to get $58 million. However, that $58 million doesn't get paid to him until 2019. I mean, that's a huge difference just from, you know, inflation. It's the old, you know, I'll pay you a dollar tomorrow for a hamburger today type thing. You know, the value of money goes down over time, and so if you can get Von Miller more money today, whether it be through a signing bonus, through bumping up his first year base salary, however it is, he might be more inclined to take a more team friendly deal or something where, you know, the money at the end of the deal isn't as big.
So as we're talking about the Neil, real quick, as we're talking about the value of the dollar here, because I do want to transition to you and a player close to your heart, and that's Kirk Cousins, who has the franchise tag $19.953 million. And he, of course, as soon as he was tagged, was like, oh, hold on, I'll be right there. I mean, he couldn't sign that franchise tag fast enough. Now, as they're trying to hammer out a long-term deal, this seems to be the Ryan Fitzpatrick argument. This is like, well, are you really worth $20 million a year? But at the same time, there's really no one else for them to go after unless it's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Mm. Yeah, if I may put, Jay, just go back to the Von Miller deal. I think one of the additional things that the Miller's cap will be taking into account is the rapidly rising salary cap. So maybe this year, next year, he'll be the highest paid defensive player, but that's not going to last very long with the way the cap's going. So he may be looking to get a deal with that in mind as well. Can I also just ask you two guys, in terms of Von Miller, deal or no deal by the deadline on Friday?
I got to say there's going to be a deal.
I'll say there's a deal as well.
Okay, I also think there'll be a deal. But going to Kirk Cousins, I think all parties here are very happy for no deal. I think, like you say, the ink hadn't dried on the franchise tender before Kirk was signing it. He probably smudged some of it. the Redskins, Washington, they're sort of saying, well, you know, well, we'll give you the $19 million. That's just below top 15 quarterback level. Play the year, see how it goes. If it works out for you, yeah, we've had a good season. We're happy to give you the money. If not, then goodbye, and we'll have a stronger roster because we haven't been spending that money, and we'll deal with the quarterback situation somewhere else. They're happy. I think Kirk Cousins is happy because he's got his $19 million. If he has a terrible season, which is not, you know, there's a fair chance of that, then I think he'll be able to get a deal next year for another team as a backup or as a low-level starter, but he's had one great payday, and that'll make a huge difference to his and his family's life. So for me in this one, I say no deal. If there is a deal, it'll be for round about the $20 million a season mark. But yeah, I think no deal, and I don't think the rest Washington are going to be disappointed in that, nor Cousins.
So Neil, I know
to hear what you guys think.
I mean, I know we've gone back and forth on this on Slack, and my question to you would be, how terrible of a season would Kirk Cousins have for you guys not to sign him in 2017? I mean, I realize he can go out there and, you know, Brian Hoyer things or, you know, RG3 things, and that's probably why the Redskins are a little shy to do the deal. But if he plays as like a league average quarterback or even slightly below league average, I mean, you guys are committed to doing franchising him again next year, aren't you? And then that's nearly $25 million. So, you know, I guess two questions. How terrible of a season would he have for you guys not to go after him next year? And why wouldn't Washington want to give him a deal, I mean, similar to Brock's? Obviously, they'd have to pay a little bit more because Kirk has maybe a little bit more definitely more of a track record. But I mean, if let's say Washington would have offered
let's
him,
say Washington goes 7-9 and misses the playoffs, preseason, postseason prediction show,
for example, well, but like, why wouldn't Washington have just gone like 4 years at $80 million?
For a start, I don't think Cousins would take it. I think his camp are quite happy to hold out. In terms of your first question about how bad would it have to be for the Redskins to either A, given the long term, not given the long term deal, or how good would the season have to be given the long term deal? I think if he plays like he played in the second half of last season, he will get the long-term deal because I think Washington will have a good record then, because he's not the key part of the offense, really. I don't think that he will contribute there. If they get to sort of 10 and 6 or so, I think he's got very strong grounds for a long-term deal to see him as a top 10, top 12 quarterback salary. In terms of how bad they'll have to be, I think if he goes back to the old, you know, for every two or three, you're getting three or four interceptions to that Kirk Cousins, then I think the Redskins, they'll just cut the end of the season and either run with McCoy for a year while they draft a quarterback. Although, it is worth noting another point of strength for Cousins is it's probably quite a weak quarterback class again next year in the draft. So, yeah, I hope that... Does that answer your questions, James? If not, keep firing them away, because the more Washington talk we get on here, the less Patriots talk we get.
I mean, it does make sense. Obviously, you look at quarterback deals like Andrew Luck. I'm not saying Kirk Cousins is Andrew Luck, but Andrew Luck had very little leverage because he's coming on the last year of his rookie deal. Meanwhile, Kirk Cousins, let's say he just has an average year next year, or maybe even slightly above average. You go, say, 9-7, not saying that Pod will be wrong, but on the off chance that that there's some injuries or whatever that he couldn't foresee. Now you're going to be forced to give Kirk Cousins a 4 or 5 year deal at least $25 million, because the, you know, franchise tag next year will be $25 million per year. He's not going to want to sign for less than $25 million per year. Mm-hmm. And he'll have even more leverage, because if they want to try and franchise him a third time, I think that would automatically bump him up to, you know, $30+ million for that 2018 year. I just think Washington is, I mean, they're doing the right thing and trying not to overpay and overinflate a quarterback market, but the range of outcomes that where they would be happy to part with Kirk Cousins is so small compared to the range of outcomes where they end up having to pay him, you know, $25 to $27 million per year for 3 to 4 years, as opposed to $20 to $25 million. So, I mean, they're taking a big risk trying to save, you know, $3 to $5 million per year.
I would disagree with you, James. I would say they've done the exact opposite of trying to deflate, not to suggest that there'd be any sort of deflation going on anywhere. But I don't believe that they're doing the opposite of trying to deflate the quarterback market, because I believe this is inflating it. I believe this is why Ryan Fitzpatrick hasn't signed anywhere. The top 15 average is at $19 million. Ryan Fitzpatrick believes he's one of the top 15 because he was last year, and he's not going to get paid that way. I think the reason why you know, Cousins signed that deal so quickly is because he knew he wasn't going to get $19 million out of the Redskins or out of anyone else. You mentioned next year it becomes $25 million. He's definitely not getting $25 million out of anyone next year. But if the Redskins see that they don't have any better option, they're going to have to sign him for the franchise tag, and that's $25 million. And you're right. The third time around, if they have to franchise him again, I believe he gets the average of the top three, which is going to be outrageous. So,
yeah, I think we can rule out certainly a third franchise tag. I think we can probably also rule out a second franchise tag. I don't think Kirk Cousins, now obviously I don't know the guy personally, he's welcome around here if he wants, but I don't know him. I don't think he's the sort of guy I think he's the sort of guy who knows his value. And I think if Washington has, let's say Washington goes 10-6, wins the division, and maybe gets close or wins a playoff game, I think Washington would say, fair enough, that's the market for the quarterbacks. And he'll get a deal in the sort of maybe 20 to 22, 23 million a year. And I don't think anyone could really complain about that. He is an ascending player. He's gotten better over the last couple of years. And if that continues, I think that's fair. If he bombs, then he knows he's not going to get... he's going to be like a Ryan Fitzpatrick and not be getting that big deal. But I think he'll be fine with that. I think he will settle for the 13, 14 million a year. And take his chances either at Washington or with another team. Yeah, I think he's quite a realistic guy. I don't think he's the sort of player who's going to hold out for a very poor deal. I don't think he would do that. Do you guys think there'll be a deal for Cousins? Deal or no deal?
I'm going to acquiesce to you, and I will say no deal.
I'll say no deal as well, although I disagree on Washington's approach.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so Mohamed Wilkerson, he has the franchise tag at $15.701 million. The prediction from CBS, CBSSports.com, is that there will be no deal. He is in one of those precarious positions where he is one of the better players at his position, but the Jets have two other guys that are right there with him. And so the Jets have the luxury of letting Mohamed Wilkerson walk and not really doing that much damage to their team. That said, Wilkerson is one of the better, if not the best, defensive tackles. And yes, I just threw up in my mouth saying that about a Jets player, but it's the truth. So what do we think is going to happen here with Mohamed Wilkerson?
I mean, I don't think there's going to be a deal. You know, they're just too far apart, and you see how the Jets are handling the Ryan Fitzpatrick situation. You know, some would say that they're being stupid about it. Others would say that they're, you know, being smart. I know Andrew believes that they're doing the exact right thing. You know, they've become an organization over the past couple of years where they seem much more disciplined than, we'll say, years past. I don't see them closing this gap in time. I see, you know, Wilkerson playing next year, maybe being a little unhappy about it, or probably being a lot unhappy about it. And, you know, does that impact the Jets maybe in 2017 when Wilkerson can get some offers from other teams and, you know, make the Jets pay a premium just to keep him around?
I think it's a great situation for Wilkerson. He's obviously a really, really good player. He'll play out the year, and he will walk next year, and he's going to get a massive deal. He's another one that's been Fletcher coxed with his deal, because he'll be willing for that sort of money, because he's up there with that sort of player. Yeah, I think free agent next year, and wow, he's going to get a huge deal.
All right, so we're all in agreement on Mohamed Wilkerson, so we will quickly move to the next player. That's Eric Berry. He's a Kansas City Chiefs, and our Chiefs superfan Nick had this to say about Eric Berry.
Hello, this is your Kansas City Chiefs superfan Nick. Eric Berry is going to get a long-term deal. You can take that to the bank. It just makes far too much sense for both the team and for the player, frankly. You know, just talking about Eric Berry, he is, you know, he's one of the best free safeties in this league and one of the few really true free safeties in the Troy Polamalu mold, where he can range in the backfield and give help and jump in front of balls where he sees it. He also can play up in the box. Is very good at run support, and actually, you know, the Chiefs will use him on blitzes as well. He can really do everything and really help the defense any way they need it in any given play, in any given moment, any given game. But even beyond that, the fact is that Berry has become sort of the de facto mascot for the Chiefs since his fight with cancer over the last 2 years. Be Berry, be strong has basically become the motto of the Kansas City Chiefs. It's in pretty much all the press materials. You'll see it all over the stadium. And so, especially for a team like this that has put a lot of money into re-signing veterans and showing the locker room that they will really value and reward dedication and continued good play, it would absolutely shock me if they let Berry walk or let this thing fester into an ongoing problem with the team in terms of making Berry play out this year on the franchise tag. But it also just makes sense for both sides in terms of the money. The Chiefs have less than $300,000 under the cap right now, which means that even if they needed just to sign a journeyman veteran for training camp, they wouldn't be able to do that with a lot of confidence because they couldn't carry that over into the actual season. And the thing is that I don't think it'd be that difficult to find benchmarks for a deal with Eric Berry. We had Harrison Smith sign a 5-year, $51 million extension with the Vikings last month. And as pointed out by Joel Corey over at CBS, that makes a fairly sensible comparison for the Berry deal. That gives Smith a little over $10 million a year and $28 million in guarantees. For Berry, I mean, I imagine he's going to try to get himself a little bit more than that. Probably he'll be playing at $11 million or $12 million a year with, say, $30 million in guarantees. But it shouldn't be that difficult to sort that out. And even at that, that will give the Chiefs, depending upon how they structure it in the first couple of years, a lot more leeway in terms of their salary cap this year, which is really needed. The Chiefs tend to like to not to front load the first year of the contract. And so, you know, it could free up $7-8 million, probably, you know, possibly more, and really give them some breathing room and, you know, maybe make some moves here going into August, you know, when we have those training camp moves take place. So it's definitely going to happen. And if you're looking to make some sort of a bet this week, I would bet on Eric Berry getting a long-term deal.
So there you go, guys. Nick says a deal only makes sense for both the player and the team. We're looking at the Harrison Smith deal that was just recently signed with the Vikings. He got a $51.25 million extension for 5 years. He established new benchmarks for safeties in the average yearly salary and overall guarantees. And we all, I think, can agree, Eric Berry, a better safety than Harrison Smith. So the question is, how does this deal happen? Oh, Neil wants to challenge that. I like it.
Yeah, I think Harrison Smith in this coming season is going to just display that he is up there in the upper echelon, really high in the upper echelons of safety play. I would put him ahead of Berry right now. Not that I think Berry's a poor player. I think he's a very good player. But Harrison Smith, I think he's a special talent on that fantastic Minnesota team, Jay.
Yeah, I hate Minnesota. James, what do you think?
I think that the Chiefs are another disciplined team. They weren't going to go out and set the safety market. Now that they have kind of an anchor point with Harrison Smith, a deal will get done. I mean, this is going to be Eric Berry has a good history in Kansas City. Kansas City has lost several defensive players already. May not get Justin Houston back for this season. If they want to stay competitive, they're going to need to keep Eric Berry and keep him happy.
Go ahead, Neil.
He's one of those players that I think every team has, you know, one of those guys who just feels like he's a Washington player, or he's a Chief, or I mean, you've probably had like Teddy Bruschi and these guys who just feel like they're New England through and through. And I have a feeling with the history that Berry has with that team, I think they keep him there and give him a long-term deal because he's a really deep part of that organization.
Well, and you heard Nick mention it in his piece about how he's become the sort of the unofficial mascot. Be Berry, be strong. Yeah. His recovery from cancer, definitely a great story. The question is now, will he get rewarded for his play on the field and the inspiration that he brings to a team? You know, Matt Chatham talked about it during our conversation about the greatest running backs of all time, which, by the way, is an episode you can hear if you subscribe to the show on iTunes. Go back and take a listen to that. And talking about the emotional impact and how that's difficult to measure, but it's clear and obvious with certain players. Eric Berry would certainly fit in that category. Now, the question is, does Alshon Jeffrey fit into that category for the Chicago Bears? Well, our Bears superfan Tom had these things to say about the wide receiver.
Off-season speculation on the negotiations between the Bears and Alshon Jeffrey hasn't been very positive recently. The gist of the situation has its roots in Jeffrey's penchant for accumulating soft tissue injuries. Even though Jeffrey started 16 games in 2013 and 14, the situation was bad enough to where John Fox commented that Jeffrey needed to improve on his tendency to be dinged up with this kind of thing after being hired last season in 2015. Then things went downhill during the season as Jeffrey missed 7 games, finally going on injured reserve with a hamstring injury. Since last year was the new Bears regime's first and only year, they've never actually seen Jeffrey play healthy, live, and in color, and that alone is an issue. The problem is that the Bears believe that these issues are preventable. So after last season, they outlined an off-season training plan for Jeffrey. And, of course, they've been tracking his progress all off-season as he regularly checks in with them. And, oh, crap, that didn't happen. Jeffrey stupidly decided to skip voluntary off-season workouts, despite the fact that he signed his franchise tag offer, which means the Bears are paying him $14.5 million to not be with the team. Showing the kind of dedication that I'm sure always sits well with an organization that's negotiating for the right to pay you tens of millions of dollars in more guaranteed money over the next 3 to 5 years. So the Bears haven't been able to monitor Jeffrey's progress, and even though Fox said Jeffrey looked like he was in good shape at mandatory minicamp last month, no one really knows what that means. Bottom line, there's a nagging feeling that the Bears might not think that Jeffrey works hard enough to stay in shape, and there's speculation that they'd like to see him perform for one healthy season before shelling out big cash to him long term. Now, having said all that, I'm more optimistic about the situation than most of the reports indicate. For one thing, some of the articles contain the statement that the Bears are only offering Jeffrey, quote, mid-level receiver money, unquote. Something that no one around here believes. You don't franchise a receiver that you think is a mid-level player. I'd say Jeffrey's agent is the source of these reports, and that what we're seeing is the result of his attempt to negotiate through the media. I particularly take issue with columns that are suggesting that having Jeffrey play under the tag for a season is the best thing for both sides. That's hogwash. Jeffrey risks serious injury playing in yet another contract year, and he'd be a fool not to take a reasonable long-term offer. On the other side, with salary cap now rising at an alarming rate, the Bears can surely see that salaries are jumping up like the dinner bell rang, and that waiting another year to sign Jeffrey long-term could cost them a great deal of money. If you ignore all the speculation and agent-generated babble and just look at the concrete facts of the matter, they provide too much motivation for both sides to reach a deal, and I think the odds are much better that something gets done than most people think. I don't know that I'd characterize them as great, but certainly not hopeless. So that's my spiel. I'm Tom Shannon. You can find me on Twitter, at Bearing the News, all one word, so that you too can join the throng of followers who show me they care every day by reaching out just to tell me that I am full of fecal material.
So again, pretty straight and simple. It makes sense for the team and the player to make a deal. However, CBSSports.com disagrees. They don't think there will be a deal in this particular case. What do you think, James?
This one's interesting because the key phrase is when Alshon Jeffrey is healthy. He always seems to be a little bit nicked up. I know last year he only played, I believe, 9 games. When he's on the field, he's easily a top 10 receiver, at least in, my book. He may even have the potential of being up in like the top 5. I think that would be a stretch for him, but it wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility. Now, he wants to get paid as if he is, top 10 with top 5 potential and will be there for 16 games. The Bears, however, just have to point and say, well, play 16 games for us one time and then we can make a big deal work. I'm hoping that there's no deal on this from more of a selfish reason. I know we have a receiver down in Houston that's going to need to be paid here relatively soon. And, the longer we can go without a big without another big wide receiver contract is, another year that we can go trying to convince DeAndre Hopkins to take a little bit less, give us a little bit of a hometown discount. Not to get too far off topic. I don't think there will be a deal, but that's not to say that there shouldn't be. There's just too much ground between the two.
Yeah, I think I agree completely with James there. That's seems spot on. in terms of where Jeffrey stands in terms of the sort of wide receiver group in the NFL, I think he's one of those players that a little bit under the radar, probably playing with Chicago. I think he's right up there. He's as good as anything. When he's fully fit, he can be a dominant player. So probably deserves a deal in line with the top players at the position. But like James says, you know, staying healthy is your availability is your top ability.
Next up on our list here, we have Tremaine Johnson, cornerback for the Los Angeles Rams of St. Louis. Apparently, there hasn't been much progress on a new deal ever since the Rams used their franchise tag on Johnson instead of Janoris Jenkins, and Jenkins, of course. Jenkins left, right? He's now with the Giants. Am I wrong on that? Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's correct.
So, I mean, the Rams are sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place, on top of the fact that they're in a brand new city that's extremely important to the NFL. My guess is they're going to want to make a deal. The question is, can they really afford it on a guy by the name of Tremaine Johnson, who is not one that comes up when we're talking about the greatest cornerbacks in this league? Neil, go ahead.
Well, you know, to be honest, Jay, it's the Rams, so who cares? I think they probably need to get that deal done to get him into camp. Losing their corner and free agency. Then they also lose their safety. Or was that last year they lost their safety, McLeod? Not quite sure.
That was this year as well.
Was that this year as well? Well, they probably have to get him in, but it's going to cost quite a bit of money. So, I'm going to say no deal on this one.
James?
Yeah, I mean, he's got all the... I mean, all he has to do is go to management and say, look, you had the choice between us or between myself and Janoris, and you chose me. Clearly, you think I'm a better player. I'm not going to give you a discount. I think the Rams are thankful every day that the Cleveland Browns and the San Francisco 49ers are in the league to cover up just how inept they've been for the past several seasons. They have a rookie quarterback coming in. They've, you know, not to harp too much on how many personnel decisions they've screwed up, but they already said that they don't want Nick Foles back. Nick Foles is like, fine, do something with me. But they've killed his trade value, even though he's only going to make, less than $2 million this year, and you'd think could have gotten them another draft pick to replace all the ones that they dumped into their rookie quarterback. There's not going to be a deal. I hope, for as good as Tremaine is, I hope he stays healthy this year so that next year he can go out and play for a real team.
And the final person on our list here is Justin Tucker, the kicker for the Baltimore Ravens. Neil put it best when he said it was the Rams. Who cares about the Rams? It's a kicker. Do we really care that much about a kicker? Just to give a little bit more credence to this, Steven Gostkowski currently is the NFL's highest paid kicker. Gostkowski is the third most accurate kicker in NFL history at this point. He has a 4-year deal averaging $4.3 million per year with $10 million in guarantees. So Tucker is looking at that, and Tucker's a good kicker, but he's not Steven Gostkowski. But again, we're talking about kickers here, and the role of the kicker is getting further and further watered down as guys like Ben Roethlisberger say, hey, let's go for two on every play from this point on. It's an interesting.
Yep. Role of the kicker isn't important until they shank a extra point in the playoffs, right, Jay?
That's right. Those dreaded Minnesota Vikings.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Certainly.
You'd be better placed to answer it than I am. I have been following a little bit the recent deals that have gone to some basketball players, who really are complete no names, if you like, getting massive deals guaranteed for what we would call the quarterback money. I just wonder what the mood is over there with the NFL being the wealthiest league, I believe, out of their sort of top three or four sports. What's the mood amongst the nation in terms of how these basketball players seem to be getting paid so much, and are the NFL players being underpaid?
I don't think you're going to find too many people shedding tears over millionaires, as kind of a general rule. I think most people that follow the NBA closely realize that it's a completely different dynamic. You only have, you know, 11-man rosters instead of 54-man rosters. The television deal is obviously going to bump the salary cap up to the point where the two salary caps aren't that far apart right now. But with the NFL, you have to put 40 additional people on that roster. I think the average person is accustomed to mediocre NBA players or role players, as they're generously referred to, being overpaid. You know, that's nothing new. The only thing that changes is the dollar amount.
It's definitely interesting to see, you know, baseball sort of in a similar position with their salaries as well. And you look across the board, I think, you know, you've got NHL, which I don't understand how they even have the money to afford expanding. So including more players, it's honestly, when it comes to sports economics, I highly encourage you to go listen to Andrew Brandt, because he is way smarter than I, when it comes to talking about anything of that sort. And maybe it's time to bring Andrew back and talk a little bit about that, because I think that's it's an interesting conversation for sure, Neil. Speaking of interesting, it's time to get real interesting. And it's time to talk about Tom Brady and Deflategate. And we all know Deflategate is a bunch of bunk and hooey. Just go ask Ben Affleck. He'll tell you all about it.
Especially after a few drinks.
But Tom Brady's appeal for an en banc hearing with the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit was rejected. And thus, that means his 4-game suspension will be served this season. However, he still has one Hail Mary, to steal really bad puns, in his pocket, and that's to appeal to the Supreme Court. Likelihood the Supreme Court will hear this, pretty much everyone says, is very, very low. That said, what people need to understand at this point, and Matt Chatham said this in a tweet that I retweeted earlier on Wednesday, the amount of misinformation and public ignorance to what is actually being argued, because they're not arguing over if there was the right amount of air pressure in footballs anymore. That has nothing to do with it. What they're arguing now is labor laws and the ability and things that are happening that were or were not written into the CBA, and sort of the way that the collective bargaining agreement is being interpreted. And I will read you now the response from the NFLPA in terms of this decision. And this is what they said. The NFL Players Association is a labor union that protects the rights of all its members and pursues any violations of those rights by any means necessary. We are disappointed with the decision denying a rehearing, as there were clear violations of our collective bargaining agreement by the NFL and Commissioner Roger Goodell. Despite today's result, the track record of this league's office when it comes to matters of players' discipline is bad for our business and bad for our game. We have a broken system that must be fixed. We will review all of our options carefully on behalf of Tom Brady and all NFL players. And I think, you know, there's obviously been a lot of jokes about the fact that Deflategate is over a few pounds of air pressure in a ball. But this is turning into something a lot more. And honestly, when I read this, I look at the next time the contract is going to be renegotiated, and I say it's going to be a long, long, long holdout. What do you guys think about what's happening right now in the NFL? Neil, I'll start with you, because you're from across the pond. So, you know, your knowledge of the U.S. court systems may not be what James and I's are, and maybe they're even better, because honestly, I don't know that much about the court system.
I doubt that very much with you two guys. But
What I would say, Jay, is I did read the, now I'm just going to call it the decision sheet, but whatever ruling came out there on a piece of paper, I read it. I think it was about 20 words long. But what you have to do, I think, is read behind the words, which was basically, what the hell is the NFL and the NFL Players Association doing being in this court, at this level of court, over this nonsense? Go away. Don't come back. We've got proper work to do. I think that's what that was telling me when I read that. I would. You look at this whole situation, and you're right, Jay. It's not anymore about how many, how much air was in the ball or wasn't in the ball. And that's all fair, but it's starting to look very, very bad for Demaurice Smith, in my opinion, and the rest of the NFL Players Association. They're going to lose this. It's going to have long-term ramifications in terms of future discipline for any player. And as each case passes, I think it's going to look bad for Demaurice Smith. They've obviously had their pants pulled down, their bum smacked on this one during the negotiations. And they've got, what, another 5 years of this current CBA to go?
So, yes.
Yeah, dark days for the Players Association, because I think we're going to lose this. It's going to look bad for everybody. And actually, I think the NFL will be reasonably happy.
It's interesting. I haven't heard that comment. James, what do you think?
Well, I mean, to start, I don't fault Brady for fighting it. I don't fault the NFLPA for fighting it either. I mean, that's, you know, if you were a member of a union, no matter how you went about it, you want them to represent your best interest.
To this level, though, James, sorry to interrupt you, but to this level, this is what, your second highest court in America?
It is, but at this, you know, I would be happy if, you know, my representation said, you know, we're willing to go to bat for you, you know, right up until the end. I think Jay really pointed it out in his introduction to this, that at this point, I don't really think, I think that they are more keen on the next fight. They're trying to avoid Roger Goodell from circumventing the CBA and just handing out punishment that with no checks at this point.
Exactly.
Which, you know, as much as we want to complain about this and how it just keeps dragging on forever and ever, the underlying ruling is that Goodell could make a decision at his discretion and did not have to take into account, you know, facts, or could make broad judgments based on a person getting rid of their cell phone, despite them not actually having the power to, you know, subpoena a cell phone. It does seem very foolish. It's clearly meant for a labor lawyer and not for some schmucks like us to delve into a lot deeper. Anything that gets people a little bit more knowledge of the overall process and how kind of messed up a process is, I'm all in favor of. People care a lot more about football than they care about the inner workings of the United States court system. But I guarantee you that people now have a slightly better appreciation for that court system. People may actually care about the presidential election, because that next president is going to be appointing a Supreme Court justice. And by God, if I hate the New England Patriots, I want somebody who's not going to appoint a Brady-friendly judge. That's only mostly joking. And then to the greater point, I don't think the news media or the sports media has the ability to hold the attention of a national audience long enough to go into a nuanced explanation. And so that's why everything devolves into a shouting argument of, my God, was it below 13.5 PSI or was it above 13.5 PSI? Which is kind of a shame that we all have the attention span of somebody playing Pokemon Go.
Great job of bringing that back. By the way, what we're going to do for you folks, because we're not going to get too much more involved in this conversation. There's really no point for it. And James really put it right. We're a bunch of schmucks. We're not the experts on this. However, a bunch of us schmucks did get involved in a much longer conversation. And some of the schmucks are a little bit more knowledgeable about this than we are on our Slack group. And we're going to paste a lot of that conversation on our Facebook page. You go to facebook.com/NFU podcast or just type Next Fan Up in the search bar on Facebook. You'll go right to our fan page and you'll be able to read the comments from some of us schmucks about the Deflategate hearing and sort of what's next involved. Because there are some ramifications now that go beyond the NFL because, you know, not only now... Now, the way that our court system apparently works, if you want to interpret it this way, and some people will, and other people will interpret it another way, and there'll be another case that will go all the way this high, and it will also make fun of it, because it'll have to do with, you know, the one example that was brought up is maybe a player is dreaming of killing kittens, and Roger Goodell deems that that's bad for the game, and thus he suspends him for the rest of the season. That's kind of extreme, but the interpretation of this ruling is that Roger Goodell has exactly that power. He now has sole discretion of determining what quantifies as a mark on the shield, and thus can deal out whatever punishment he deems is necessary for that. And it's all detailed in this Slack conversation, and I want to present that to you. But I also have a very special guest coming up, and I want to bring him in now and talk about a lot of the things going on. He's a big Raiders fan. Yes, Neil.
Jay, come on. You've got to give the listeners, you've got to channel your inner Patrick and give us a little bit about, from a New England fan's point of view, how the mood is feeling. And secondly, I don't want to put James on the spot, but surely to goodness, there is a scene or an episode of Game of Thrones which fits this beheading of Tom Brady quite aptly.
Well, I was just thinking of the entire fourth book for this procedural hearing. I mean, it's 800 pages of, and then they walked here, and then this is how you rule a city. You get about 15 pages in thinking there'd be something good, realize there's not, and you're still in it for another 785 pages.
I will just say, you could see it was coming. We knew it was coming. The first four games of this season, you know, I said it in the division preview. Again, go back, check out that AFC East preview. It was done in early June. I don't think with Brady or without Brady, the Patriots do better than 2-2. Maybe Tom makes the difference in one of those games and goes 3-1 instead of 2-2. But I feel very comfortable with Jimmy Garoppolo for the first four games of the season. And if I'm the Cleveland Browns, I know I said this once before about the Gronk U tour. Clearly the Gronk U tour part deux is coming up this season. And Cleveland, oh boy. I felt sorry for you before, but you're week one against Tom Brady coming off a four-game suspension. I really want to see the record broken for most points scored in a game. It probably won't, but that's what I'm going to be rooting for, and that's what I'm going to be talking about for the next few months, is how Tom Brady's coming back with a vengeance and ready to put the record number of points up on the board. But hey, our guest is waiting. We got to get to him. All right. My pleasure now to bring in our very special guest. He hosts his own podcast, which is called The Jason Fitz Show. And yes, his name is Jason Fitz because it would be weird if it was, you know, The Jason Fitz Show and his name was Derek Weiskel. Hello, Jason. How you doing?
Man, I'm so good. Thanks for having me. This is a blast. Everything good for you?
Everything's great. Everything's great. Well, I shouldn't say great. Got a little bit of bad news today, which was yesterday. Again, don't ask. It's a time traveling thing. But yeah, you know, Tom Brady is going to be suspended for 4 games. So everything's not quite peachy. But I do get to look forward to week 5 against the Cleveland Browns and a new NFL scoring record. So that'll be fun.
Well, here's the thing, though. You know, I tell Patriot fans this all the time in regards to Deflategate as a general thing. You know, the 4 games is the 4 games, and it's not going to be the end of the season for the Patriots. I mean, they're still going to be the favorite in the division. Even if they go 0-4, they're still going to be the favorite in the division. It's still their division to prove that they can't win. And, you know, so for all the Patriot haters, it's not going to demolish their season. And for all the Patriot lovers, you're going to be just fine. I mean, it look at it this way. You're getting a free shot to look at your quarterback to see if you have the quarterback of the future on the roster. Look at it that way.
That's true. Then the question is it Jimmy Garoppolo or is it Jacoby Brissett? I do think it's Garoppolo.
Well, I think the organization hopes it's Garoppolo, right? I mean, they have to hope it's Garoppolo. But this is one of those sort of leverage plays. See, if a team like the Patriots goes through something like this, there's opportunity. Good teams always find a way to come through these moments and look good. So for the Patriots, Garoppolo looks great. They have either the quarterback of the future if they feel like they need it, or they have trade bait galore out of their quarterback situation. It's a win all the way. You know, the Patriots will find a way to win out of this situation because they're the Patriots. That's what makes them, you know, loved and hated.
And you mentioned that too. And it's, you know, no matter how many years they go 12-4, 16-0, 11-5, it's always that it's us against the world, guys. You know, Belichick finds that angle where it's always like, oh, they're disrespecting us once again. How dare they? And here we go again. Hey, everybody, guess what? You just got the Patriots mad again. Good job.
I always say I would hate to be a server in a restaurant that ever had to serve Belichick's family, because the man can find a way to be disrespected anywhere. You know, it's his great gift. It's what seems to drive that whole team, that whole franchise. He's got that ability to turn that on. So they'll make it work.
Let's talk a little bit about your Raiders. You know, we tried to connect with you before we did our division previews to talk about the top 10 greatest players of every team. And I know you're a huge Raiders fan. I don't know if you had a chance to check out what our Raiders super fan had for the top 10. But who are some of the guys that you would put on your top 10 list?
See, and the problem, the difficulty with that, when you're looking at a multi-generational team, let's say it like that, you know, there's different love for Raiders fans depending on their age. So I think it definitely skews that list, because it's hard for me to, you know, to know where to place Daryl LaMonica on a list of all-time Raiders when I didn't really grow up watching him play. So you hear the stories, but when you talk about, you know, for me being, you know, almost 40, when I think of the defining Raiders that I grew up watching, you know, there is a spot for Tim Brown at or near the top of that list. Howie Long, Rich Gannon, modern generation Raiders players that fans that are my age got the chance to really grow up on. Bo Jackson, limited career, but has to be on that list. And Marcus Allen, you know, if you're willing to take your fan hat off for a minute and forget that he spent the last portion of his career thrashing the Raiders as a Chief, he has to be on that list somewhere. You know, these are the guys that I know it's sort of stock cliche answers, but if you grew up watching the Raiders in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, those are the guys that really stand out to me.
I loved this line from Monty. He has Tim Brown as his number one guy. And he writes, number 3 all-time receiver in NFL history with Jay Schrader, Steve Berline, Todd Marinovich, Donald Hollis, Brian Greasy, Vince Evans, Billy Joe Hobert, David Klingler, Wade Wilson, Bobby Hoying, Marcus Tuiasosopo, Rick Meyer, T. Martin, Rob Johnson, Brad Johnson, Chris Sims, Jeff Hostetler, Jeff George, and Rich Gannon, 7 offensive coordinators, 5 head coaches. I mean,
golly,
that list
is, you know,
awesome.
And that list right there tells you why Raiders fans right now are so excited. It's not just because the team has turned a corner in everybody's mind and they look to be competitive. It's because for the first time in generations, you know, there is a sort of stable young future at quarterback, it feels like. You know, I mean, you can go all the way back to the Raiders of the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. They are not a franchise that's ever been able to draft and raise a quarterback. So when you read that list, not only are you talking about what defines a portion of Tim Brown's career, you're also talking about a portion of why the fan base is so jacked right now for the franchise. And that's because Derek Carr is somebody that the fans can get behind and say, man, we may have a 10 or 15 year answer at quarterback. And when you talk about that list, I mean, we haven't had that in my lifetime. We had that window of greatness from Rich Gannon. But other than that, if you are a 40-year-old Raiders fan, you do not remember stability at the quarterback position, alarmingly.
Let's talk a little bit about the Raiders currently. You know, last year they finished 7-9 with a lot of optimism, and this year they are darlings. I know I love the Raiders. I've got them going 12-4 and finishing second in the division. What do you think the Raiders' chances are this season?
If they go 12-4, you know, the party at my house, I'm not sure my liver can recover from a 12-4 season for the Raiders. Look, it's a good football team. I think that there's still some issue for some reason for concern in the secondary. I know that they turned around and they made a big splash signing Smith as a corner. But I think Raiders fans should also be a little honest with themselves. When's the last time you were going into Kansas City and said, oh, can't throw at that side of the field? I think there are some concerns in the secondary. And when you've got a division that's really good, that worries me. That being said, this is sort of a big year for the franchise. I mean, this is a year that they have to find their way to double-digit wins. I think they have to show that they can be competitive. And they have to show that they can beat the Broncos, beat the Broncos and Chiefs consistently. It's a tall order. It's a tough division, but I like where the team's headed.
Yeah, I don't like their chances against the Chiefs. As a matter of fact, when it came down to me picking my boyfriends this year, the Chiefs ended up just edging out the Raiders. Although I still like to tease Monty, the Raiders might be like my boyfriends on the side. You know, that I keep from the Chiefs. Because I do love, I mean, I look at the Raiders schedule and it is, you have a nice, easy schedule and it's really just the Chiefs. I'm not big on the Broncos. I mean, I don't think the Broncos have put themselves in a very good position going into this year. I think there's going to be a little bit too much Super Bowl hangover and I think there's been too many departures and that team's going through a transition period right now.
I agree with that. And I think that, you know, there are Broncos fans that would tell you that they won last year in spite of their quarterback situation, not because of it. And even if you buy into that argument, I still don't know that if you're a Broncos fan, you can look at what's going on right now and feel comfortable with chemistry. And I think that matters. I think that's one thing I really do like about the way the Raiders have built moving into this season. Yes, they've had to augment it with some pieces, with some big name pieces, but there's a young core that over the last 3 years has essentially been drafted together, is growing together, knows how to play together. I think that there's something to that system, you know. So I don't love the Broncos this year, but at the same time, when you've been as good for as long as they have been, I think it's theirs until somebody proves otherwise. You know, Kansas City looks really good too, though. You're right about that. Kansas City is a solid football team.
You know, hey, the name of this show is called Next Fan Up. It doesn't necessarily have to be about football. We just decided we were going to make it. But I know you met a guy recently that you're a huge fan of, and I think many people listening to this podcast would know exactly who that guy is, too.
And you know what? I say this every single night when I go on stage, because there's just a reality to what the music business is. I've been very, very, very fortunate. I've worked my tail off my entire life, but you have to have lightning strike to really make it in the entertainment business, I think. And, you know, I'm lucky to be a part of the band Perry and to have been a part of lightning striking. But there are still nights when you play 150 shows and you've been gone 300 days, there are nights that you get up on stage and you can't find it. And what I think of every night when that happens, in general, when I'm sitting up there on stage, I think about some kid, because I remember my first concert when I was 11 years old with Skid Row and Bon Jovi. And
that was
I remember
mine.
Watching, really? Oh, the New Jersey tour, man. That was it for me. Lay Your Hands on Me had just come out. Like, oh, I can remember. I thought my dad was smoking cigarettes. I'm now old enough to know I don't think he was. but it was we were on the lawn for that in Maine of all. Oh, such a good concert. And I remember watching Richie Sambora explode on stage. Smoke was going everywhere, and I thought, man, that's cool. And it impacted and changed my life. So I've always said that the one guy in this business that I want to meet and have the chance to just say thanks to is Richie. And so there I am a couple of weeks ago taking a red eye out of L.A. We'd been working all day in the studio, and we get to the flight, and all the security lines were messed up, and I was in a bad mood, and I, you know, slammed my laptop into the little thing, being a whiny little girl, and I look over to my right, and just standing next to me in the security line is my freaking idol at that point. So, and he could not have been more kind or more gracious. And, you know, we got the chance to tweet back and forth afterwards a little bit. And we talked for several minutes in the airport. And, it's just like, it's amazing when your childhood legends live up to the hype, man. He could not have been a nicer guy. And I told him, and like I told you, I do what I do every single day because Richie Sambora changed my life. And, I hope at some level, at some point over these thousands of shows I've played as a musician, I hope some kid somewhere has had that same effect. I hope I'd been able to pay it forward what he did for me.
That's awesome. Yeah, the Brotherhood Tour was my first one. I saw it in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was right down on the river, right underneath the big green bridge, which I don't believe is there anymore. I remember I was going as the family, and I remember hating every second of it because I really wanted to see Skid Row, and I didn't really want to see Bon Jovi, although I totally changed my mind after that concert and totally became a Bon Jovi fanboy. We had this conversation on the old podcast I used to work on back at the Four Letter Network. What would be your key Bon Jovi songs if you had to do like karaoke? Somebody put you on the spot. What are your go-to Bon Jovi tunes?
Okay, well, I'll be honest. John's got a much higher voice than I do, but I think that, you know, they're a power ballad.
Dude, I can't sing. I'm still singing Bon Jovi at the karaoke bar.
yeah. No, I'm going, I'll be there for you. Like, I'm going, like, power ballad. Or, like, if you want to go, you know, because the next era for them, like, these days and all that stuff, like, there's some good stuff on those. Just any of the ballads, really. You know, always. Like, any of the ballads are going to be my go-to, you know, karaoke Bon Jovi jam. I will tell you this, like Sebastian Bach. Now there's a guy that can wail. And I mean, that guy can sing, but the funny thing about that first concert for me is he came out opening for, you know, the show, and we were in Portland, Maine. And he said, "Hello, Seattle, Washington," or wherever the F we are. And that crowd, man, they booed him off the stage. He got through two songs. Skid Row got through two songs before the crowd just, they wouldn't have it. They were so mad that he didn't know he was in Portland, Maine. So I think about that too, whenever like we have on our set list, the biggest thing on the set list is the city you're in every night. And that's because we're all deathly afraid that we're going to stand up and be like, "Hello, Buffalo," when you're in Cleveland. That's our fear.
That is awesome. That is so awesome. Hey, tell us a little bit about what you got going on, with the band, with the podcast. Give us a hint of what we can expect to see coming up from Jason Fitz.
So the Jason Fitz Show podcast is part of the CBS Sports Network. It's on Play.it. It's on iTunes. You can get to any of it. Just search for Jason Fitz. And then, you know, during the off season, we've actually been sort of biweekly. But during the season, we're weekly. And it's really cool. Like I get the whole approach for me has been using my friends in sports and using my friends in music to put together one podcast. So, you know, last year we had Adam Schefter on the same episode as a guest that the Fall Out Boy was on. So you never know, you know, Imagine Dragons keyboard player admitted he sneaks an iPad onto the stage to watch Chargers games during their concerts. So, you know, we try and do some of that, but then we mix it up with a lot of heady, you know, the Greg Cosells of the world and Schefter and, you know, Peter King, all the big guns have been nice enough to give me a little bit of their time and come on the show. So, we'll during the season, we go weekly and we mix it up every week. And for the band, there is new music right around the corner. I mean, right around the corner. So Blink, and you're gonna hear some new Ban Perry out. And I do want to take a second, especially because people always talk about this stuff in the music business. There's all of these, are they going pop? Are they whatever? You know, and none of that's true. Like, the Ban Perry's always been a fixture on country radio. We're going to continue to be a fixture on country radio. If some of our songs want to get played on the pop station too, we certainly, you know, we love that exposure.
But we're not going in.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it always makes me laugh when people say, you know, is TBP going pop? And it's like, man, last time I checked, If I Die Young became such a huge hit because it crossed over. So we're certainly never going to turn down crossover potential, but we're still, you know, we're making the music that the Perry family wants to make and not worried about any of the other labels.
Awesome. Awesome. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. We'll definitely have to have you on again as the season gets a little bit closer. And, you know, I've got your Raiders losing to my Patriots in the playoffs. So despite your awesome record, you're still going to lose in Foxborough. I think that's a tale we've heard once before.
Yeah. As we end this, I just have to remind you of one thing. It was a fumble. There's no such thing as a tuck. All right? You cannot tuck. All right. So. Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
All right, so there was Jason Fitz of the Ban Perry. Go buy their albums, go follow him on Twitter, and of course go listen to his podcast, The Jason Fitz Show. He's talking about football all the time. Neil and James, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks for joining me today. Was there any other news that we didn't get to that you wanted to throw a quick take in there about? Neil, go ahead.
I'm still living off the NFL guy who fell asleep in his car in the pond. Fantastic. Who hasn't done that on a Saturday night?
And James, do you have any stories that you'd like to comment on?
I've got lots of stories. I don't know how appropriate they are for comment, though. but we'll just leave it at that.
Hopefully you're not falling asleep in your car and in a pond. That would not be good.
I blame Siri or Tesla autopilot, whichever
maybe
the chasing, bigger villain is.
Maybe you're chasing your Pokemon Go thingy.
Hey, remember, don't forget to subscribe to the show. Leave us a review on iTunes, much like some of our other fans have done. And I will read you one right now, one of our latest reviews here on iTunes, as I'm pulling it up and trying to kill time doing so. And this one comes to us from Hal. Says, came across the show and definitely adding to the podcast roster. Love the concept of 32 knowledgeable super fans debating their favorite NFL teams. Great to have Pod Vader as the field general calling the shots. And after listening to the NFC East preview, quite pleased to see how the New York Football Giants stack up for the coming season. Looking forward to seeing how the show develops over the year. It could go all the way to the top of iTunes. Well, thank you, Hal. Appreciate that review. A nice review.
Hal,
much
thank
better.
You so much. You are the second version of Hal. You have to redeem your name. Stanley Kubrick has done it a disservice so far.
A much better review than what we're used to, even from our own superfans calling us schmucks, James.
Yeah, what was that all about?
All right. So for James, for Neil, for Jason Fitz, and for the rest of our super fans, I will bid you all adieu with the fine words of Mr. Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.